It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Ian Kroll, joined by Joe Thomas and Gav Buchlands. It is Friday morning, and we're here to talk all things Everton. First off, Joe, couple of days off, feel refreshed, how are things?
I've had a few days off, yeah. I've given up trying to book time and hope it's quiet when I'm off, and now just accept that it's busy every day. So,
yeah,
managed to kind of enjoy watching things from afar for a little bit.
Have you managed to keep yourself away from it?
You're not spending really, no.
It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gav, how are you?
Every day's a day off for me.
Okay,
yeah,
fair enough.
No, my employers may say different. There's never a day off, is it, with Everton at the moment?
No.
And that will probably be the case once the playing season has ended, did I say. And it's changed a lot since what was in here on Monday, was it? Tuesday?
Wednesday, wasn't it?
Wednesday. So 48 hours had changed since we were speaking on Wednesday.
Yeah, it has, to be honest. We'll timestamp this now, because like you said, everything is fast-paced, changing by the minute, to be honest. So what are we, 11:40 a.m. Friday the 10th of May. So if you are listening on Apple Pods, if you're listening on Spotify, you know, we might be out of date by the time this rolls
out. By 11:50.
Yeah, you never know. So I know Joe's got his phone there. He's going to keep an eye on proceedings on Twitter and stuff like that as we're there. So we might have some breaking news. But like I say, we will see. We are live, so give us a subscribe, show us some support, and give us a share. All the support that you give us is absolutely appreciated. Also, give us a review on Spotify and Apple Pods as well. Also, leave us a comment. You know, leave your opinion. As always, Joe and Gav, I'm sure they'll respond back to anything you guys say. So we are going to talk about Sheffield United, the last home game of the season, but you know, predominantly we will speak about the takeover. I know we say Joe's been off this week, so we'd love to hear his thoughts on proceedings, everything else that goes along with that. A few little tidbits. I know Gav wants to vent about something in regards to the young player of the year.
Absolutely.
So we will
give me 15 minutes.
Yeah, we are going to come on to that. Slight update maybe on Seamus Coleman's future at the club. It reports he's been offered a new contract, so we'll hopefully get the lowdown on that. But Joe, it's all takeover. Good, bad, ugly, I suppose, if that's what you want to call it. What, you know, first day back in work, but what is your understanding at this moment in time of the state of play, I suppose, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, I think things aren't quite moving as quickly as people would hope or want them to. I think we're still in a little bit of a daze, really, from the last fortnight of ongoing shenanigans with 777 partners. But I think what's become clear over the past 10 days or so is that, yeah, there have been a lot of red flags for a long time. And, I'd like to hope that listeners will agree that we haven't been shy in pointing them out. But it feels like that move is probably coming towards an end right now, for a combination of reasons, really. I think it's the first pod I've done since on Monday when I wrote about the Leadenhall Capital, the London-based lenders, lawsuit filed against them in New York. You know, $600 million fraud claims. Now, they're serious allegations, but I think that people have to remember that, one, this is a civil lawsuit, not a criminal one. Two, they're only allegations at this stage. You know, we're right at the very preliminary stages of proceedings. 777 haven't commented on them, so we haven't heard their side of the story either. But obviously, they are very serious claims, and they come up against a backdrop of wider issues. And I think, really, rather than claims be necessarily anything that comes as that much of a surprise, it perhaps almost the allegations arguably fill in some of the blanks that we have wondered about 777 and how they're operating and their wider business interests. You know, they say it's one of 16 lawsuits that the company is facing, which is obviously a problem. And I think it's not that that is the straw that breaks the camel's back necessarily. It's more that you set against those claims against the realities of what we know, and the realities have become clear with 777 in recent weeks. You look at their Australian airline bonds are entering voluntary administration, leaving passengers stranded across Australia. That's not a good look. Why did that happen? It happened because of something that we've reported on for a while at The Echo, which is one of 777's biggest backers, ACAP, starting to look to divest from them. If that relationship breaks down, they're one of the main sources for 777's funding. So if they need money to complete the Everton deal, which we know that they do, where else are they going to get that from? So you look at what happened in Australia with Bonza. You look at the fact that they needed an extension to try and meet the Premier League condition for the takeover of buying out MSP. Obviously, they sorted extension over that, which meant they couldn't get the money straight away. You look at the fact that just in general, it's taken since September. There's still been no answer on that. You look at what we reported on here as well about things like their PR company moving away from them over, you know, allegations of in relation to payments. You look at Standard Liège, another club that they own. Well, you know, reported throughout this year about them paying players late and staff late and things like that. Obviously, there are further issues there. And all of this kind of combines to create a really unhappy picture around the group. One that is, you know, has been building, and I think it's perhaps now built to the point where, you know, it looks really, really unlikely that the Premier League would give them approval. It looks really, really unlikely that they'd even get to the position where they'd ask that question of the Premier League now, because they need to find the £160 million to pay MSP, and it doesn't look like they could do that. And really, we're probably at a point where Fahd Moshiri, who has been dead set on 777 for so long and, you know, has believed that they have been the only ones that have been the right partners for him. Well, I think now at this point, he's probably got to start looking elsewhere. So now we're probably at this present moment in time almost seeing reality catch up with expectation. I think a lot of us have thought this might happen at some point. I think there was a fear that this stuff might happen after they'd been granted the approval, and that this stuff would perhaps catch up with 777 once they were already in control of Everton, which would obviously be really real concern. That looks like it might not happen now, and it means that Moshiri has to look elsewhere. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. Moshiri is probably evaluating his options. We know this is a process that already started last month when he tasked Deloitte with looking for alternative funding packages to either maybe rival 777 or help get them over the line. So we know at least internally behind the scenes there, you know, at the very top, there's perhaps been a kind of starting to move towards contingency planning and plan B. Well, now I think they're likely to be in full flow now, because I think to carry on working on the basis that the 777 deal is viable and will ultimately lead to success would be, you know, naive at best and probably incompetent at worst.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Joe. Really good update. I mean, Gav, obviously we spoke about this on Wednesday, so for me and you, this is kind of a bit of a part two. And, you know, Jordan, that podcast, Alan Myers tweeted that Moshiri's looking for a resolution by Saturday. It's Friday now. But, you know, we're not going to get a resolution, are we, by Saturday? The only update, I suppose, we could get is that 777 are dropped completely from the picture, because we know now, as Joe's said there, you know, reports circulating around as well, that it's not viable for them to take over the club. So yeah, a resolution in terms of 777 only, but it's going to continue to roll on either way.
Yeah, Paul, I was thinking about this after you spoke on Wednesday, because obviously we were, it broke, didn't it, just as we were literally starting to talk. And I mean, it's whether there's other conversations going elsewhere that we're not aware of, isn't it? That actually, you know, maybe what the communication will be is, you know, speculation, obviously. 777 has been dropped, but something else, you know. But I'm just saying, for MSP are going to increase their involvement, because obviously they've got this thing, haven't they, of the over the loan, haven't they, where they can acquire 50.1% of a share of shares, is it?
I think it's 50% plus a share.
Plus a share, yeah. And whether they want to do that as a moot point. But that could be something, you know, something around MSB expanding their role or whatever. That, you know, so a bit of bad news or good news, whichever way you want to look at it, at the same time. Whether that happens today, I'm not so sure. But there could be other, there's other conversations we know that don't be going on. And that could be the sop, couldn't it, really? We'll just have to wait and see. But Joe far more articulately than me said about 777, that it looks dead in the water, doesn't it? And the frustrating thing for fans is we've known all about this for a long time, haven't we, about 777? Indeed, since they, you know, threw the hat in the ring in September. Why has it taken this long, and having added another £200 million worth of that to reach this juncture when I would imagine a lot of people could have forecast this, but late last year when he said there'd be resolution in quarter four, you know, by the end of December, hasn't happened. So what's new to Moshiri now than what was known to him 4 months ago?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, this is the point, Joe, isn't it? I mean, Moshiri's surely the only one making this decision, allowing this to happen. You know, he's got to make a decision now. And has he got to come out and say something to the fans as well? You know, some sort of statements, you know, that would, you know, put fans at ease.
I don't really know what he could say that would put fans at ease. You know, so, you know, it's a very difficult and messy situation. I mean, look, if we break it down to how it's got into this stage, I think actually it's probably quite straightforward. You know, 777 weren't the first people that came to the Moshiri agreed exclusivity with. You had the Kaminsky ones back in 2022 and then MSP last year as well. So they weren't his first choice. But it is true to say that since September, they've been his only choice. Now, what's never really come to light is what the makeup of that deal was. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what Moshiri was offered. Look, he's put a hell of a lot of money into this club. That's indisputable. How he spent it has been the problem. You know, you can understand that there may be a scenario in which this is particularly attractive to him, or far more attractive than any of the alternatives. One thing that's certainly clear from a Moshiri point of view is that, and this is not good for the club, but perhaps better for Moshiri, is, you know, since September, the club's been running on somebody else's money. So that's probably why it's been useful for him, despite the red flags, to kind of carry on going on with it, because it's not him dipping into his own pocket to pay for wages, to pay for the costs, to pay for, you know, the ongoing stadium development. For the Premier League, I can quite easily see how they were caught in a bit of a regulatory catch-22 by means of, and I'm not saying it's particularly good tactically from them, but they were probably left in a situation where, you know, the owners and directors test is more stringent. There's a lot of pressure on them to get things right. But there's also a significant amount of grey area. And you can see the problems that someone like 777 Partners might create for that process, because you're in a situation where you look at them. We don't know a huge amount about them. We have their track record of football clubs, but all the football clubs they've taken over, on the one end, you can say yes. And again, we've reported this extensively throughout. Late payments at some clubs for wages, transfer bans over payments. You know, Jenner had a point taken off them over issues. A lot of these clubs have continued to face issues whilst they've been controlled by 777. Yeah. But the 777 line, and you know, there is some credence, is that they were already a mess when they took over, and that, you know, where it gets murky is they say some of these problems are the overhang of the previous issues. Well, it's very difficult to kind of get to the bottom of that without intricately knowing those clubs' finances, but it is a plausible move. And you can see how from the, you know, the Premier League's perspective, you have that and there are concerns, but are they big enough concerns to say no to the deal? Perhaps not. You look at perhaps some of the moral issues, how they made their money before they got into football, or what their business is at least based on, the idea of, you know, picking up you know, the insurance and the compensation deals of vulnerable people that, you know, owed money in staggered payments over a long period of time, and, you know, they want upfront money quicker, so 777 or their affiliate companies give them money and basically buy the compensation packages off them cheaper. And, you know, morally you look at that and you look at some of the questions that have been raised in court cases around the world, again, are only allegations because they haven't been dealt with. And again, you can see problems, but without them having necessarily been convicted of anything, without them necessarily to have been found in any breach of serious regulations, you're looking for a red line, an official red line to have been crossed probably before the Premier League can turn around and say it's a definite no. You look at some of the, I mean, I know that the owner and directors test has been beefed up, but when you look at ownership in the Premier League, there are murky and controversial and contentious owners there already. And you can probably see how, from a, say, it's not been ideal by any stretch of imagination. And what you would want is, you know, a process whereby due diligence sees these problems and deals with them straight away. But you can almost imagine the Premier League sitting there thinking, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. Like, if we say yes, well, we've got serious issues over them. But if we say no, there's probably legal issues about that. They might get, you know, that decision might get challenged by 777, by Everton, by others. And, you know, you look at those red lines and have any of them been crossed where they can go, no, wait, that's one step too many. And the reality is we're possibly still in that position. You know, those claims by Leadenhall, they're still claims. And as I say, they're civil, not criminal. They add to that wider picture. But probably the more concerning, tangible issues are what has happened with Bonza, what has happened with its PR company, what is happening with Standard Liège right now. I think that where the dial has probably been moved is, and I think it's fair to say, why didn't he necessarily think this was likely to happen anyway? But it's looking very unlikely that Mashiri would get anything or what he would want from this path, which is to get out of Everton, something he's been trying to do for 2 years. And the reality is that if 777 don't have the money to pass those tests, which is really starting to look like they probably don't, well, then at what point does he then kind of you know, say, I've got to be proactive now in terms of what I do and where I go to? And that's probably where we're at. That's probably why it's taken so long to get to this stage. We've just been in a grey area, but who suffers? Club suffers, fans suffer. You know, the instability has continued for so long. Obviously, you know, we know that what they've achieved on the pitch is so remarkable because of that. It's now getting to a point where it's going to impact, you know, a very, very big summer for Everton. Whether they've got any money or not is largely irrelevant. There's going to be huge turnover of players. And there's going to be the first opportunity for Kevin Farwell to properly rebuild this side, whether it's rebuild it with free transfers and cheap deals or whether there's money to spend is by the by. There is an opportunity there, and an important one, because probably the most important thing for Everton is that they stay in the Premier League. They've done that this year, fair play, incredible achievement. They've got to make sure they do it next year so that they go into that new stadium as a top flight club.
Yeah, I know there's a couple of points Joe saying there. I think I've said before, I've now on the pod, that I do think while they got the issue of the owners and directors tested with regard to the Premier League, we've obviously got this ongoing profit sustainability stuff going on, haven't we? And I do think I think one of the reasons why the Premier League's been quite lenient and all this and allowed it to play out without interjecting is they don't want to be seen to think blocking 777 like stiffing Everton twice in the same season. I think they've been conscious that there's a reputational thing there and of the relationship with Everton. I do think that's probably played into it. Regard Mashiri, and I know you want to push this on, is like, you're right, Joe, isn't it? Like, 777 are good because they've been funding the club, haven't they, all the years to the tune of £200 million. But that's only good for Mashiri if 777 get the gig. If they don't get the gig, then it backfires on Mashiri. He's now trying to sell the club that's got £200 million more of debt than what it did in September when 777 initially showed their interest. So it's also obviously high risk for 777. He's now got £200 million worth of unsecured debt.
It made sense for him whilst it looked like 777 could get over the line.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's still high. But on both parties, it's a high risk relationship. It's high risk trade, isn't it? And I do think that's really one places a risk Everton then, doesn't it, really? So yeah, I think Mashiri's role in all this is obviously a lot far more people more commented than may have commented on is interesting. I know what I was thinking about as well is talking about the owners and directors test. They have one in 2016, I presume they did. And you know, Mashiri would have come in, they've got the money and all this, have a previous experience in football. Probably, you know, flies through. What the owner's director test doesn't you've no way of finding out is how your owner reacts in a crisis. You know, what you know, like Mascheri now, you can pass the test, but somewhere down the line, when it comes
it's an
to
impossible test,
yeah, you know, a real, you know, a decision point, you know, when the club's in crisis, how your owner reacts. And what we've seen here is one of the favorite, and you can have a test that, you know, it's an unknown, isn't it? He's just disappeared, hasn't he? Largely silent, absent landlord, but the owners and director test can never decide on that, can they? Because you don't know until the time.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we can deduce, and obviously it's a troubling one for us, is you look at the people that he surrounds himself with historically, and how well they've been at, how well they've managed to handle the crises that have been put upon them, because there have been them.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at, you know, again, something that we've covered extensively, a lot of the problems now have been a long term, have been made, you know, over a substantial amount of time. And obviously, you know, there are issues on the, you know, previous board in relation to that. You look at the influence of, you know, perhaps certain agents and things like that have had on him as well. And yeah, I think a big concern or a big question for us right now has got to be who is Mascheri turning to for advice, or, you know, because now we don't know really, because it's an interim board and you know, things have become so much quieter. Like, you know, where is he taking the advice from?
It is about the owners and directors that will never uncover this, will he? I mean, they might have some previous, if you've been involved, I don't know, in other businesses, maybe as evidence, but you only find out really what your own is like at this type of juncture, isn't it? And, you know, and let's face it, for most Evertonians, Mascheri's failed their owners and directors test, hasn't he? And that ultimately is the problem.
A long time ago,
yeah. Probably when the summer transfer spend of 2017, maybe. But I do think that that's an interesting thing. We're talking about 777, who we know about, who, you know, may fail, perhaps. But Mascheri, who would have passed or whatever, we'd only find out about him further down the line.
Some breaking news. So Deitch has won Manager of the Month.
Here
we go. It's 12 for now.
Fully well deserved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Up against we'll some tough competition as well, though, wasn't he, really?
Yeah. Maybe we'll come to that later after. We'll get back on to the football thing. But yeah. Deitch has won Manager of the Month. There we go.
I feel we should have a breaking news.
Flashing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if it's in the budget for next season, we'll get it.
Good. Yeah.
Just staying on the Premier League point, and I know we talked about it for a little bit here, but did you watch the podcast yesterday with Matt Jones and Dave Powell?
Very good, yeah.
So our chief business football writer, Dave Powell, suggested that the Premier League put the criteria bar so high for 777 that they knew, roundabout, that they probably wouldn't be able to match it, because even you know, interested parties or owners or billionaires with all the money in the world would maybe even struggle to meet those criteria. I mean, we talked about that in the day.
Billion quid or whatever it is.
That's what I mean. This is not a dig at the Premier League. Even Dave said he doesn't want to give them too much credit because of what's happened, but he actually did give them credit for the criteria that he set for 777 to take over, and quite clearly they can't meet those parameters.
Yeah, this goes back to what I was saying about the Premier League don't want to see themselves as having an ongoing profit sustainability battle with Everton, and then an ongoing battle for you know, ownership and decide on 777. They want to see 777 fail themselves. I'm doing the cop. Not to do with. Also, yeah, we've set the criteria. If they can't meet it, well, you know, we've been fair and above board here, and I think that's a pretty sensible move. But at the same time, giving them an opportunity to find the funding. So I've not got a problem with that. To be fair,
the problem has been, though, was what Joe was saying. They can't technically say to 777 straight away, no, you can't take over, because a deal has been agreed. And all these, you know, fraud claims are just allegations. Nothing's been proven as far as we know so far. So that's like you just said there, they're just kind of letting it play out and say, well, you've got to meet these.
That's a sensible way of doing it, isn't it, really? I mean, there's some takeovers have taken forever, haven't they? How did the Newcastle one take a year, over a year?
18 months, I think that one was, wasn't it?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Joe, obviously, if, you know, 777 don't take over, which is looking increasingly likely. Again, just referred into the podcast yesterday with Dave and Matt. You can watch it on the Royal Blue YouTube channel and listen to it on Spotify and Apple Pods. He said that the only option right now would be that MSP do take a controlling stake into the club. Do you agree with that? Or we know there might be another party interested, but they haven't made, you know, themselves known. We know MSP have got a bit of a history with everything that's going on with loans. So, and he doesn't see that as a bad thing either, by the way. How do you see it?
Yeah, well, MSP aren't the only option.
Yep.
Because obviously if 777 deal collapses and anyone could potentially step forward, MSP would, if they wanted to, for whatever reason, would probably have a head start because they already have the relationships there and obviously they already have a foothold within the club with the, you know, with the money that they've lent it. So MSP would probably be favourites if they wanted to exercise, you know, the rights that they do have, or if they wanted to step in and help Mashiri exit the club and if they had a plan for it. You know, whether they would look to do so or not, I don't think that they would necessarily want to. I think obviously there was a stage last year when it looked like they wanted to kind of buy their way into a portion of Everton, would probably from that smaller stake start to increase it to a point where they eventually took control of the club. Yeah, that deal fell through, because it, you know, reportedly because of rights and media funding. Yeah, the group that Everton had the biggest set of loans to objected to it. We're dealing with a very different situation now. Whether or not MSP would still have the appetite to try and take over, I'm not sure. But it becomes more a case of, I think for MSP, the question probably becomes now is it's less how much do we gain by taking over, and how much, but more how much do we lose if we don't. They have a significant amount of money that's owed to them by the club. They have an interest in the club being stable and the club being sustainably run so it can pay back its debt and they can get their money back that they invested in. It's not inconceivable that they might conclude that the best way to do that is actually just to step in and take responsibility themselves, come in, shore things up, get the club on the right foot. And they do have the protection now that the club is going to be a Premier League football club next season, so that helps. There are ways in which, it, if not advantageous, it might make sense for them to do that. And that's one of the things that we'll no doubt be hearing more of over the coming days and possibly weeks. You know, I think that they will be one of the candidates to potentially step in. Like I say, if they wanted to, they have a head start on everyone else. Yeah, there's another American group that have been making a few inquiries behind the scenes, but the extent of their interest is unclear. Whether or not there are others waiting in the wings, I'm sure that there would be some. You know, 777 deal was to collapse, if Everton were to say, for instance, go into administration, which I imagine is something that we'll talk about in a bit more detail in a moment, but say that was to come to pass, as horrific as the human impact would be in terms of jobs lost and money owed, from a purely financial perspective, it would make it easier for more people to come in and have a look at Everton and see if they want to take over, because a substantial amount of the debt burden would be cleared. But that's certainly not me saying it'd be a good thing for the club, or the best thing by any stretch of the imagination, more that it would be a trigger point for potentially further interest to materialise. I think that not the most important thing, but like I've written a few times, I think that, and it felt like this even before these kind of latest developments with 777, but it felt like if somebody serious was on the scene, that now would be a very good time to come clear and step forward, because I think that there'd be a groundswell of support behind them, which they could probably capitalise on. You know, it's difficult for anybody to conceivably be a success taking over Everton without winning the fan base over first. And I think one of the things that 777 has done poorly is I think it hasn't engaged with the fan base. I think it made some advances at the very start and then sought to hide behind the regulatory process to say that we're not going to carry on liaising. maybe they would have, they probably would have helped to build a lot more goodwill if they'd have engaged more consistently and provided more answers over what it is that they plan to do with Everton. Chances are, or the way things look now, they probably weren't willing to provide answers because they might not actually have had them.
No.
Or certainly not ones that Everton
fans. It's become clear, hasn't it? Yeah.
And I think it's something that we've always been suspicious and cynical of, is perhaps they did have answers, but not ones that Everton fans wanted to hear. If the White Knight was to come in right now, they could exactly present themselves as that White Knight and probably, you know, build themselves some goodwill among Everton supporters right now, which would help them in the long run as they then start to go through the regulatory process and potentially take over the club. But in answer to your question, 777 collapsing wouldn't mean that MSP wouldn't be the only ones, actually, that could come in. But they'd probably be the ones most likely to, or certainly the ones that would have the best position from which to launch an appeal, to launch a bid to take over, if that's where they find their interests lie.
Go on, you're going to say something?
No, I was going to say, Dave was interesting point, didn't he, said about the question about rights of media funding block, the MSP shareholding last year, didn't he, over because of the rights of media funding loan. And the question was asked, would they block any MSP move this time? And Dave was of the opinion that possibly he wouldn't, because it helps secure that they get their loan repaid if MSP takes.
Probably one of the worst decisions in this whole thing.
That was an interesting point. I think the MSP, I mean, ultimately what we're doing, it's still a short term, isn't it, really? Because it doesn't, you know, if MSP take their shareholding as a way of preserving their investment. And remember, MSP are a group of, 13 or 14 investors, separate investors, one of whom is Michelle, isn't it, I believe. There's a lot of decision, you know, there's a lot of input there from the people behind them. So that would be interesting to see that, how that would play out. But that doesn't solve the debt position, does it? The fact that we've got all this to hanging over us. It just puts the club in a bit more of an even keel from the sort of governance of it. But it doesn't wipe away the issues that we've spoken about. And that would be interesting to see how that plays out. But I'm with you, totally. If I was riding over the hill now, I'd make my presence felt at this moment in time. And you hear stories, don't you? But it's all a bit grey.
Well, you know, you've seen fans, and rightly so, on Twitter, you know, saying if owners are just waiting for the club to go into administration, you're just starting off on a shocking foot in the first place. You just couldn't trust, you know, an owner who does that. That's not what we want, because effectively we're going to be deducted 9 points, which is time frame given, whether that's in the next couple of weeks, months, that's going to probably play into next season. It's not what we want, administration, is it? So that's why I think...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's far more than the football cost as well. There's been a problem with administration.
Yeah, no, obviously, but I think, you know, I've got a lot of anxiety, trepidation and fear, all those type of words about what's going on. But watching, when I was producing the podcast yesterday with Dave, he was really good, and I felt a little bit of calmness from inside him. And I know he doesn't know exactly what's going on, but, you know, I felt he was good. He felt MSP was probably the best option right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, do you guys agree with that? Because his suggestion was that they would come in, run it like a business. Obviously, there would be cost-cutting measures in that, which mean player sales. We know that's going to happen anyway. But then they would look to, within 18 months, 2 years' time, look for an exit strategy. Yeah. But that, you know, in a way, that surely would benefit Everton anyway, because they would have done the job and run the club properly, and hopefully we'd still be in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to say whether that'd be the best one, because I don't know what any alternatives might be.
But
I think if you were to offer the three of us around the table right now a scenario where MSP just took over and you know, 18 months and tried to get the club onto a firm financial footing, I think right now we'd take that, wouldn't we? We'd take an announcement that said, you know, MSP coming forward in the morning and
must no loans,
someone,
basically.
You know, someone saying, yeah, we've agreed a new deal, 777 are gone, MSP are going to... I think given all the different scenarios that could play out, I think we probably... Yeah. I don't know if I'm speaking on your
behalf. No.
I think what you've got to probably remember with MSP is that they're money people. You know, they have interest in sport, but their expertise is in money, and everything that they do is from a, you know, a position of wanting to benefit themselves financially in their own interests. Now, in this case, you would think that their interests align quite closely to Everton Football Club's interests and the supporters of Everton Football Club, and that the sounder footing that Everton is on financially, the better protected their investment is, the more likely they are to get their money back. And simultaneously, the more appealing it becomes to future owners and the stronger the club becomes from a footballing perspective.
Yeah. You've put it better than what I could have said. And I just think all football owners effectively, you know, other than sugar daddies, are, you know, money people. They're not looking to lose money effectively. So if it was to benefit Everton, if MSP come in, I just think if there's people out there now, they need to make themselves known now, because effectively if this deal doesn't go through, which it's looking unlikely it is, there's a real chance that the club could go into administration unless Mascheri, you know, does something. Think.
Yeah, we'll come on to administration in a bit, but yeah, I think it would be helpful if there. We know there are other people that are interested. It'd be helpful if it was.
But my point is the MSP thing is, say the stadium needs 50 to 100 million to be completed. The MSP comes in. Where does that come from? You know that list of, you were talking about on Wednesday. You read out the list of all the different financial burdens that we've got at the moment. MSP coming in doesn't really change. Okay, you can say that their debt may disappear temporarily. A lot of that stuff is still there, isn't it, really? And as you said, Dean, quite rightly, from a business decision as a club, those business decisions still need to be made, isn't it? About whether, you know, who to buy, who to sell. We've got their eyesight. Profit and sustainability still rearing its ugly head in the background.
Because we've got that stadium interest.
Absolutely.
Argument that's going to happen at some point in the coming months, and yeah, that is going to have a huge impact.
So they'd be taking on all that burden, wouldn't they?
How much do we owe them?
140, 150 million.
So it all just depends on how much they really want to recoup that money, which I'm sure they do.
Sure. If they got 12 or 13 people who've invested,
that's what I mean.
And you know, there's a lot of people there who've backed them, isn't there, really? So I don't know, but it doesn't change. Yeah, I think that wouldn't be not the worst result, but it doesn't change all these business decisions and financial issues in the background, does it?
It does not. Joe, we've been speaking for 38 minutes now, and to be fair, my next point was I was going to let either Gav vent, or I was going to talk about Seamus Coleman, but did you want to speak about administration a little bit?
Yeah, you've used the words a few times. We've seen it a few times today, haven't we? I think some of the national media report, I can completely understand the concern. Look, Everton isn't in a strong position financially at all. I think we can all see that. I think that it's probably worth bearing in mind in relation to that, you know, we got a tranche of money from 777 at the beginning of the month. How far that takes into it, I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, and what happens if 777 deal falls through? Well, then it will fall onto Fahd Mascheri to start finding, you know, digging into his own pockets, and the extent to which he could do that and his willingness to do that remains unclear. But what we are doing now is, I think we're in a position where I might be wrong, but I don't see that as an imminent threat.
No.
I think that we have to remember that we're getting very close to the summer now. Everton are guaranteed to stay in the Premier League. Transfer window opens on June the 14th. So if the club needed to, and it may well need to for a host of reasons, profit and sustainability included, but obviously, you know, in roughly a month's time, a summer window for several months opens, which gives the club an opportunity to bring in significant external funds for a considerable period of time, and that helps. And you also end up in a situation where things like the TV money starts to come in, the merit payments for where they finish the Premier League.
It's sponsors money, all that type of stuff,
know,
isn't it?
The club will have just received, will have a significant tranche of season ticket holder money. For the people that have paid up for next year. So obviously, whilst Everton face a very uncertain long-term future financially, and even short-term, I think that in terms of administration, it's probably still something that we should be cautious about.
Way off.
I didn't say way off.
Okay.
But what that's what I was thinking. It's not a, you know, not something that's imminent, I don't think. Just for clarity as well, if Everton, so I mentioned this simply because I've been asked it. This isn't trying to get something in that I can then point back on. But if a club goes into administration and Premier League gets minus 9 points, the deadline for that for this season compared to next season is the final day of the season. So if Everton were to say, for instance, cause, I mean, you see some people talking about things like a tactical administration, which I think is, you know, again, the human cost of administration would be so catastrophic, not just for the club, but for the city. The jobs that would be lost, the suppliers, the creditors that would get, you know, that would probably get lose out on the money that they're owed. I think it's still a subject that, you know, deserves some caution when discussed. But yeah, if Everton were to enter it before the final day of the season, the 9 points would come into effect this season. And if it was after the last day of the season, at any point from that, it would be for next season, for the minus 9. But yeah, as I say, it's clearly a topic that's out there for discussion. And I don't think that's... I think when you look at where Everton are financially, that's understandable that some people would look towards that. But I certainly don't think it's a good thing. Even if there is a chance it would bring other investors and other potential parties to look at Everton. And I think that human element is something that we need to be very aware of. And like I say, the signs that we can see suggest that it's not something that's certainly not imminent.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I'll ask you, Gavin, I'll probably know the answer. It's just the fact that Joe's explained it really well there and the deadline and stuff like that. Would you stick or twist?
In what way?
Well, you said the deadline's before the end of the season for the administration.
I wouldn't. Yeah. Look at administration.
No, just asking the question.
There's stuff like, they always say the classic side is people don't get paid on time, you have problems over the annual revenue and stuff, and we're not at that stage yet. Yeah. As Joe said, though, you can't, you know, when you say, you know, you keep on going back to what I said about going concerned in the accounts, didn't it? You know, in the annual report, you know, that it needs, you know, it's a club to carry on trading, it needs new investment. And so, ergo, if we don't get new investments, you know, what Joe's saying is right, as an administration becomes a possibility, absolutely. But I don't think we're at that stage, yeah. And from what you hear, don't you hear that we're all right at the end of the season? As you say, there is then opportunities, short-term decisions to be made around player sales in June that would then, you know, whether we may need to happen anyway. And I think... I think I'm with Joe on this one, really. Not at this stage, but with a big but.
Yeah, it's not a case of stick or twist or anything like that. No. It's a try and avoid it in all circumstances.
No, yeah, of course, absolutely. I'm just asking the questions. I mean, Steve Murphy, little comment here. He's swearing that I'm going to have to change it. Talking crap, lad. We will never go into administration. That would be the end. I won't support administration in the club. I don't think anyone on this podcast is advocating for administration. No, just asking the question.
No. And also, I hope he's not misinterpreting what we're saying here. Yeah. We're trying to offer reassurance here, not saying this.
Which is why I've read his comments.
Which I said the same thing on Wednesday. And now Wednesday's pod is, you know, I don't think that it's not immediately on the table at the moment. And there's other things with administration. It makes it difficult to borrow money, doesn't it? Mm. Afterwards, when you start trading, things like that.
No credit. No credit flow.
So it's not...
The other thing to add in is obviously, whilst there's that capacity to potentially sell players to bring money in from June the 14th, which might help pay the bills and things like that, it's also difficult to read too much into that if Everton do sell a big player or players very early in the transfer window, because they may need to do that for profit and sustainability reasons as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the complications are myriad. Like, there's no disputing that the club is in a mess financially. But, like Gav says there, there's a few stages, HMRC,
staff, players, stuff,
play, things like that, stuff, which... we haven't even started at that point yet. So,
no,
the early warning signs.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to reiterate that again, if you watch the podcast yesterday, Dave Powell said the exact same thing, which I think it put me at ease more than anything, because I have, you know, major fear about it. We're going to move on, but there is a couple of questions we're relating to this. Yeah. So, I'm going to let Gav vent, because I know he's desperate to
absolutely
vent.
Absolutely.
So, just jump in if you want to answer, but do you think 777 will be told no deal before the weekend, or is it going to drag on until the end of the season? Well, I mean, what are we saying?
I imagine that something like this is probably quite complicated, so yeah, Mashiri will have to, if he's proactively seeking to end it, which I think at this stage it would probably have to be the case, then there potentially be penalties that he would have to deal with for withdrawing from that deal. I don't think things move quickly in this world, albeit the Warner signs have been there for a long time. You would hope that contingency planning would be in place. I think it probably rumbles on. It'd be nice to get some clarity. God, how nice would it be to have some certainty? But how imminent that'll be, I think that right now, kind of said at the beginning of this pod, I think there's probably a lot of people sitting in rooms around tables, running lots of calculations through their heads and gaming the scenarios, and probably still at this present moment in time working out what's best for them. I'd be a little bit surprised, but obviously, you never know, do you?
It's just gone back to the resolution, the word resolution, doesn't it? On, in what Alan reported, wasn't it? And those words were fed to him. Obviously, on Wednesday, is what do you mean by resolution? The only thing I'd say is it wise to announce anything 24 hours before the last home game of the season?
As if I was assuming my resolution in his head, is what's going to be. They've got to put it into practice, hasn't it?
I'd probably, if I was in his shoes, I'd probably just leave it to next week. Do you think Josh Wander will be there, baseball cap in hand?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. He's got a lot on his plate.
On Saturday, it might be too warm for a baseball cap, but that's what struck me about Friday. If it's bad news, or you might get stick over, why do it after the last home game of the season, mate?
Okay, last question before we move on to a different subject. Two Wheel Lucas says, do the Premier League deserve a round of applause for dragging their heels, saving the club from a poor Mashiri settled decision?
I think that the thing to remember with the Premier League, like with so many others, is that probably everything they do is with their own interests in mind. What they've been tasked with trying to do this season, with the outside scrutiny that's come with trying to stave off independent regulation, is make it look as if they're acting within the interests of wider football. In reality, it's not. It just happens to be that sometimes their interests align with the wider, with the strength of the wider game. I think obviously the conditions that they placed on this bid, and the fact that they haven't approved it, is a good sign, because everything points to, everything points to that 777 wouldn't necessarily be the best suitable owners for Everton. I think a learning curve for a lesson for the Premier League after all this is probably to work out how they can get to a situation whereby they can almost strengthen this process, really, because it hasn't helped Everton financially to be in a situation where it's dragged on for so long and the debts have risen up and things like that. It's got to be a kind of a question of when do you step in and what is best, because it's not best for the sustainability of Everton nor for the Premier League to almost set an impossible task and then let somebody fail however long it takes. Really need to be bolder and more proactive in saying no if they see those warning signs. But it's a very, very... one thing I think is fair to say is it's very, very complex. Like, I wouldn't be able to draw up an alternative set of proposals, I don't think. I think it may well be that it almost feels like 777 have... Not 777, Premier League, have been in a situation where they haven't really been able to make a decision either way and have been hoping that the bid will fail of its own accord, which is what it has done. They probably could have done with that being the case a couple of months earlier. It'd be handy, I think, if they could put a backstop on these things rather than say they take an indefinite amount of time. If they could say, well, if you haven't met conditions within 6 months or so, then we'll say no, you're not suitable. And then you can maybe come forward again, but you've got to go through the whole process again or something like that.
Yeah, spot on.
I don't know. I think probably, however it's transpired, I think we're all probably better off at this present moment in time, or happier that the fact that the deal didn't go through at Christmas like, you know, certain people hoped it would do.
Yeah, okay.
Should we talk a bit of football?
Oh, it'd be nice.
Yeah.
Go on, Gav.
You wanted
this on the agenda. It's on the agenda. Jarrod Branthwaite. Cool.
The announcement yesterday of the young player and the senior player of the year yesterday, and I was looking through the list of the young players and the older players, and there was a couple of things struck me. And the first thing is the vitriol, apart from Ollie Watkins, in the usual suspects of clubs, which, you know, whether the Premier League, you know, should show greater quality in terms of the choice of players. I know the year before, I think Casado was up for young player of the year. It just reinforces that view that the Premier League exists, and it's important for their brand to have like the top players all the time. As you know, without being more imaginative and being fair to take account that, you know, other players maybe not have the same opportunities. That was the first take I got from it. The second take I got from it was this ridiculous rule. I think you have to be 23 at the start of the season, but you get the ridiculous rule that Isaac at Newcastle in September is closer to 30 than 20, and he's being nominated for young player of the year because he's 25 in September, which is just a ridiculous position, isn't it? You know, young player of the year is, you know, what you would say 22. I mean, it used to be young player of the year like 22 23, and now you raising it up to, I think Foden's 24, is you basically got senior players who've been there donkey's years in the young player of the year. I mean, that's just, I mean, Maynard has had a decent season at United. He's only played for 4 months or 5 months, and he hasn't been, you know, pulling up any trees in the last 5 or 6 weeks when I've seen. And that you know, it's just that and that perception, and I don't necessarily suppose it all the time. And this goes back to what you were saying, Joe. You put the Premier League does what's best for the Premier League, and what's best for the Premier League as a brand is to put the marquee players, is to squeeze them into any award ceremony, even though some of them don't obviously, you know, should be there or deserve to be there, or you know, that's the, both them things are the case. And the young player of the year is ludicrous on that basis of age and where the players are in their careers and just the general rules. And the Starling omission from the young player of the year is Jarrod Branthwaite, for me, who's 22, who's had a tremendous season. You know, there's another centre-half at another Merseyside club who's in the player of the year, who I would say actually has probably had a poorer season than Branthwaite week in, week out, and there's probably a supporter of that club who may say the same. And he should be there. That's what the award's there for. It's not to, you know, reward players who've been playing for their senior clubs for 5 or 6 years. It's for players like Branthwaite who've come in, who's been new to the Premier League and, you know, has flourished. And that was always, the award always went to players like that years ago. Players to coin one of Michael Richards' phrases, you know, burst onto the scene. That's what it's there for. It's not there to give Haaland an award, because he's not a young player, is he? He's been a senior player for 4 or 5 years. He's at the biggest club in the country, or Foden. But on Branthwaite, who that award should be for, that's, you know, and I know Main, who's in there, you know, so I don't think he deserves to be there, but at least he's in there for the right reasons. But some of the other players on it, Isaac, 25 in September, a young player, come on. You know, and Branthwaite should be on there all day long. In fact, there's an argument to say that Branthwaite's been one of the players of the year, never mind young players of the year. And it just reinforces that thing about the bias and the Premier League using this stuff to promote their brand at the exclusion of clubs outside the top 6 or 7. And I think that's wrong. I think it's only Ollie Watkins, isn't it, outside the top 6 or 7 who's in there, and Ollie Watkins definitely deserves to be there. But there's people on both lists who shouldn't be there, and they're only there because the Premier League wants to push their brand, and I think that's wrong, and I think that's unfair on the other clubs who provide the Premier League with content, you know, and good content most weekends, and so that's my rant over.
I assume you're not going to disagree.
Yeah, just the breaking news I kind of was anticipating during this is this has just come out as Everton have withdrawn their appeal against the 2-point deduction.
Wow.
So, yeah, they've just put a statement out there. So
I mean, make a timestamp of that on the pod.
I mean, any appeal up against Branthwaite not...
We'll go on to that.
Yeah,
I completely agree with you. I think it's a shocking admission. I think he's been brilliant. You know, and some of the players that are there instead of him, you know, you have serious question marks. And I think you can make similar arguments in relation to manager of the season as well. I mean, like, I think Sean Dyche isn't there, and I think he deserves to be quite frank. I think that, it's funny, look, I can see an argument whereby he wouldn't necessarily win it, because obviously you always have the longest run, winless run in his club's Premier League history. But I think when you look at the job that he's done, this is a club that two seasons in a row have gone to the final, week of the season with its Premier League status in jeopardy. And then to take a weaker squad than those 2 years, get it to safety weeks in advance of the end of the season with 8 points worth of deductions is absolutely phenomenal. And I think that, albeit he's just won April's Manager of the Month, I think we see that because there's just no choice. The Premier League knows it has no choice, bearing in mind the month he's just had, than to do it. But when you look at that wider perspective there, and probably, let's be honest, the reason that he's not up there for Manager of the Month is because, season, is because you can only tell the story of that application, that bid or that challenge against the backdrop of F in the Premier League of throwing.
Well,
you can't say he deserves to be up there for manager of the season without saying because he's dealt with 8 points of deduction from unprecedented Premier League profit sustainability.
I was just about to jump in with that when you said that.
So I can very much imagine that the conversation of Premier League towers being, how do we tell this story? And then going, you know what, let's not do it. And I think that's at the detriment of the integrity of the Premier League once again, because look at what he's done.
I don't agree with the thing about corruption. You don't know what you're doing. It's, let's face it, probably, opposites, aren't they? You know, to be corrupt, you've got to know what you're doing to a degree. But you can see why fans, when you see like that young player of the year and senior player of the year stuff, when you see like the bias towards a big club's players who shouldn't be there, you can see why fans then, you know, when we talk about the profit and sustainability and how clubs are cheated within that, then take the next jump and say, well, actually there's a pattern emerging here. So I can see why people think that. But the young player of the year, I could do another 15 minutes, but I'm too tired.
Far more important
things to talk about.
Well, you know, I do want to speak about Coleman and Sheffield United, but just on Joe's breaking news there, Everton have withdrawn the appeal. I do think we need to touch on that because we're getting questions in about it now. It's obviously going to be all over Twitter.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
We brought this point up, didn't we, a couple of weeks back? And as far as I can remember, you two were against, and Joe definitely was. So, first of all, just reaction to it and what's the thinking behind it?
You're probably not surprised, and I can see a thought process for it. I think it's strengthened by two things in comparison to when we last spoke about. One is the fact that Everton are safe, and two is that we've had the Forest appeal that came back and they found they didn't get any rewards. So I think both of those have probably helped to change perspective. I think my position previously, and so it's now, is that if you withdraw it, you kind of appear as if you give up on some of your points, and it's trying to work out where that leaves everybody going forward, because Everton, I think, are going to have further PSR conversations with the Premier League. So it's probably a case of trying to work out whether or not you can settle any arguments in advance of that and strengthen your position of understanding. There's probably an argument to say, and maybe the tables have turned following that Forest case, for following the success of Everton in recent weeks and the points that they've picked up with, that actually it's more beneficial for the club to try and curry some good favour with the Premier League. These conversations are going to carry on happening. Everton have a hearing with the Premier League. I don't know that a date's been set. I'm assuming it'll be over the summer, but it might not be.
Is that for the interest? We're talking about the interest.
Which is over the
interest
on what the club says were loans to be used for the stadium. There's about £20-odd million worth that's going to be argued over. If Everton lose that battle, that's an extra £20 million that they're going to have to find ahead of June 30th for the PSI deadline to try and not breach for a third time. So if Everton can curry any kind of good favour in relation to that, any kind of goodwill, we've seen that exceptional cooperation has helped in the past in the case of Forest. We've also seen how Forest have... What Forest were able to do that Everton couldn't do was they were to a certain extent able to learn from Everton's mistakes over the first case because they had a precedent to follow. It's very clear that they saw how Everton fought their position and Forest looked at that and said, right, you know what, if we just cooperate on every single level, maybe we'll be able to draw a contrast to Everton and get some benefit from it. And they were able to because their points deduction was reduced for that cooperation. Interestingly, what they've done since then is they couldn't have been any more critical of the Premier League, the process. They appealed the process. They said it was ridiculous. Then they've come out and had a go at referees and everything. They couldn't have behaved any more different to how they initially behaved. And obviously, they haven't got any points back and they haven't earned themselves any goodwill, I don't think, in the process. Everton can perhaps look from that now and go, you know what, maybe if we just try and be a little bit savvy, we can maybe help ourselves going forward. You never know, like it might come in favour because, like I say, Everton are in a position where I think from the outside looking in, Gav, I think it's fair to say it's going to be a challenge to not breach PSR again for a third season. That's not saying it's going to happen. There are differences this season compared to last season, such as
No management payoff. No payments aboard the directors.
And things like that. Increase in merit payments because they should finish higher in the league and things like that as well. But it still looks like it'd be a challenge that might only be able to be resolved with the sale of a player before June the 30th. So I think the conversations and discussions between the Premier League and Everton over profit and sustainability are only going to continue and they're only going to be a feature of the near future. And I think there's a history of showing that if you try and almost take the moral high ground or be the better man or try and be show a willingness to concede some of your position, then that has a benefit in the long term. And therefore, I can understand why it's been...
Interesting, the last time you were at the period, the Premier League didn't put any aggravating factors, did they, I think?
No.
I think also as well, going back to what we were saying before, as I always say, on our agenda and our board meetings, there's a lot of bandwidth that being filled, and from a corporate perspective, you just probably think it's just another thing. We don't have a headache.
Yeah. That was my point at the time.
We're not going to get anything for it, and I think I think that needs to be borne in mind really. And all this, when there's probably, I don't want to use the word battle, there's bigger conversations, as Joe said, around PSR to be had over the next 3 or 4 months.
Have we got time to talk about Coleman, Sheffield United?
Yeah, briefly.
Very quickly. I mean, when I say Sheffield United, I'm just going to ask your predictions. Coleman then, Joe? Is there reports suggesting that Everton have offered them a new deal?
Well, it looks like like we've always said, I think it will be Coleman's decision when and how he leaves Everton. I think that looks like it's going to remain the case. Whether or not he chooses to extend this stay, I think the opportunity will be there for him. If he wants to, he was very open. It was a very difficult decision for him last season. This season, from a playing perspective, hasn't got any easier for him. Obviously, he had a lot of injuries. I think probably what will concern him won't necessarily be the big injuries, but it'll be how, and it's happened so often this season, when he has come back for a game, he's had to miss a couple following it, and that's happened 2 or 3 times, I think. But obviously, he's a player that of huge value to Everton dressing room. And I think that during a time in which there could be a lot of upheaval and ahead of a season, which I think will be another challenge on and off the pitch, I think he's the type of personality that you definitely want there. It would have been nice if this was all resolved ahead of Sheffield United, just so we had some clarity as to whether or not that it'd be his last game. Because the last thing we'd want to do is for him to have something like a Jagielka where it doesn't, that's not clear. He doesn't get the send-off that he deserves. I think we all agree that he would deserve an exceptional send-off. But obviously, Deitch seemed to be trying to heavily hint yesterday that it might not be his last game. I think a decision's yet to be made by him, but I think it will be his. So I think there's a value in him staying. I could also understand why, from his perspective, he might want to go. Enough is enough. So,
I mean, there's so much you can take.
I just hope at some point, whenever it is, and it could be, you know, next season or the season after, or you could go with the coaching staff, it could be years to come. I just hope at some point we genuinely get to celebrate Coleman and the role in the impact he's had at the club.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, Gav, because you've seen when, like, certain Everton players retired and then maybe a couple of years later they've come out and said they didn't leave Everton the way I wanted to, or I wasn't treated the greatest. I think Phil Jagielka has actually come out and said that. I think maybe Leon Osman as well.
Tony Abbott is, I know that, you know, there was a few that went, I think they were in the backdrop of Martinez, Gomez. Yeah. It was all like the flux, but
so obviously Coleman looks like he's going to be here for another year.
I've not got a problem with that. I mean, I would imagine the wages aren't going to hurt us, are they? I mean, we've got, you know, and I think the one thing that will be interesting to see is Ireland. Future about weather, because I mean, there was one game, didn't you play 290 minutes for Ireland
within like 5 days or something?
Is whether as part of the deal there is a conversation about
it should be
playing for Ireland. As you saw with Decore, you know, he got two things that weren't necessarily not linked was the Decore announcing the year extension to his contract, then saying I'm not going the Cup of Nations. And
got injured for a month anyway.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's another factor to play in, really. But I've got an issue. You get the impression that the club at the moment needs Coleman, doesn't it?
I think so.
On and off the pitch. Somebody that supporters can identify with. He is obviously a throwback to, I mean, it might be 16 seasons next year he's played for us if he makes an appearance. He's a throwback to the, you know, mid years of David Moyes, as much as he played in 2009. Moyes was still there 4 years later. So, he symbolises a lot for the club, and I think we need him possibly more than what he needs us at this moment in time.
One thing, and I don't think Coleman would have any dispute with this either, is that if he does stay on, I think is stronger. If he does stay on, the right-back situation from a long-term perspective still needs addressing this summer.
Debut against Benfica at the Stadium Light when we got trounced. Yeah. I think he played left back. I was there. What a shocking night that was. Fantastic. I was. We'll be left, I think, on the 5th. I was like, I've had enough of this. got stranded on a motorway.
Oh, wow.
We had a very, very weakened team out that night.
We did,
against a very good team. I think Di Maria was playing for him, wasn't he?
I just had the expectations of an away game abroad, so maybe snatch a win.
That's a pretty cool thing to say.
It shows how much I know. I know. Okay, predictions then. We're not going to obviously go into detail about this, but we've got 253 people and you've gone into both extremely, really good detail on everything that we've spoke about. Predictions. Ian Clark says 3-0 to Everton, Dominic Calvert-Lewin 2 goals. Joe, what are you saying for tomorrow?
I think Everton will win. I think Everton will win comfortably. I like that prediction. I'm going to steal his. I'd like to see some younger players, and again, Dyche wasn't particularly
it's not a style.
Emphatic about the opportunity that might that might fall some of those players, but you know, Everton are safe. They're playing against already relegated team, which are far below the standards of the Premier League. I think that this is a good opportunity, if possible, to use the likes of maybe give someone like Lewis Dobbin a start, maybe try Chimity up front again, those are two players I think you could genuinely learn something about for next season, and I think that opportunities to learn lessons in a pressure-free environment have been they've been non-existent for Everton over recent years. And I think, especially against opposition, which is, useful for it. So I would like that to be the case. I mean, even better, if better was to start, he still hasn't had that many starts for Everton, so I think it would be good. He started against Sheffield United in the other game, of course, up at their place, just after his arrival in a few days earlier. So, I would like to just see a little bit of rotation, not rotation for the sake of it, but rotation for the sake of trying to learn something.
Yeah.
Lewis Dobbin is a player that it makes sense to have a look at, to see whether or not, we think he can grow into a player that can do a more consistent job for the first team next season. And then, there have been a few players that have been in and around the squad a few times this season, like Sir Jenson Metcalf, Mackenzie Hunt, Lewis Warrington in recent weeks. I'm not advocating necessarily starting them, but I don't see a drawback. I don't see any disadvantage to giving them some minutes on the pitch. And especially, like, you know, McKenzie Hunt's one of, obviously, at left back. Now, you know, what his future is, I don't know. But Evans' fullback situation going into the summer is you have Nathan Patterson with a long-term injury. You have Vitaly Mykolenko with a long-term injury. You have Seamus Coleman and Ashley Young, who are both, you know, up for, their contracts are up. And even if they stay, are both, you know, north of 35.
Yeah.
You know, and then your fifth option is Ben Godfrey, who is just a centre-back. He's not a viable long-term full-back option. And it, you know, it's somebody that might be looking at his options next season, over this summer, as he looks to try and build his career again. So, you know, if you have got fullback in the under 21s that's on the bench, why not at least give them a few minutes just to see if they could maybe be, even if it's second or third choice next season, just have a little look.
I'm going to get my prediction in before you, Gav. Sorry, 2-0. The McNeil Thunderbolt and a Calvert-Lewin goal. So what do you see?
DCL, yeah, streak player, as we said on this pod, and he's previous site, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So 4 goals and 5.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for 2-0. A couple of things. You know, first name on the team sheet for me tomorrow, Chimiti.
Okay.
I
think I'd have played in both games.
Ahead of Calvert-Lewin, or partnership?
Maybe just behind Calvert-Lewin. I think I'd like to see him 2 games, because I've liked what I've seen so far. And this game, Sheffield United, last home game of the season of a certain age, brings back nightmares of 49 years ago. And we played Sheffield United,
the memories are coming out,
game of the season, and we were going for the title. We still had a chance, slightly, you know, long odds to the title. And we went 2-0 half time. I think Derby were top. They were getting beat 1-0. And I thought, like, that's it, you know, title, blah, blah, blah. Everton in the 70s summed up. Ended up getting beat 3-2. And, you know, summed up. If it was 1 of an afternoon, that summed up being Evertonian in the 70s. That was probably it. I don't think it will happen tomorrow. And I'm not talking about Everton challenging for the title. I'm talking about the results. I think it'd be good to go off the high. And I think lack of honour may be the place to do that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, I feel like tomorrow is the official countdown to leaving Goodison, to be honest, tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that makes sense. Yeah. No, I do, yeah.
Good one. Last home game of the season. So, yeah, I think that's all, isn't it? Don't think we've got anything else to say. Exhausted. We've been going for 1 hour, 12 minutes.
2 rounds of breaking news, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, this should be
like a rolling news pod. You get different people coming in there, and you can...
I've got to produce other podcasts here, Gav. Do you know what I mean?
This is the main one.
It is. It most certainly is. Okay, well, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Please remember to hit the like and subscribe button for the Royal Blue YouTube channel. As always, give us a review. 5 stars on Spotify or Apple Pods. We don't accept 3. Anything below 3, we don't accept it. So 4 or 5, that'll do. I've been Ian Kroll with Joe Thomas and Gav Buckland, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.